Woi woi, woi woi, woi woi. Danny Denko on the radio again. Yo, if you want no smoke free weed, go board yourself. You need to go plant a seed. Go board yourself, make your knowledge increase. Go board yourself, go board yourself, go board yourself. You want no smoke.
Hey, all right, welcome to episode number 131 of Grow Bud Yourself. We have a great show in store for you guys. We've got some news followed by an interview with Colin Palmer from Vessel Life Science, our strain of the fortnight, a grow tip on shipping clones, plus answers to your listener grow questions and much, much more. All brought to you by Seeds Here Now, Sweet Leaf Nutrients, Excelsior Extracts, Prime Superior Inoculant, and our newest sponsor, Nature's Heritage Cannabis. Stick around. Episode number 131 coming at you. Whether you're growing from seed or from clone, Prime Superior's simple, safe, and effective products can take your cultivation program to the next level, helping to produce higher quality, naturally healthier plants. Prime Superior offers a two-step process that will benefit any garden. This is possible thanks to Prime Superior's proprietary strain of Bovaria bassania, which is optimized for plants and sets up a symbiosis that increases terpenes, cannabinoids, and yield. Simply coat your seeds to inoculate and aid rapid germination, or dip your clone cutting with the world's first biological cloning honey to improve growth the way nature intended. Next, continue maintenance of your crop with foliar or fog applications of Prime Superior's Drench, which will boost your plant's growth and ensure a heavy harvest. Best of all, the Drench will work with already established gardens, so anyone at any stage of growth can achieve a cleaner crop with better results. I've used this stuff on my own cannabis plants and houseplants, and it works amazing. I love the cloning honey. I love the boost that you get from using the Drench. And I just think all your plants will benefit from this, green up and grow better, and honestly grow more of the essential oils that we're after, the terpenoids and flavonoids and all of that. So now is the time to try Prime Superior, the world's first biological cloning honey, and Grow Bud Yourself listeners can use this code PS420 for 15% off your entire order at primesuperior.com. So don't hesitate, inoculate, and visit primesuperior.com today to learn more. All right, welcome back. This is episode number 131. Very exciting. Can't believe we made it this far. How you doing, Mike?
I'm hanging in there. Can't believe we made it this far either, but we're happy to be here.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And now, you know, we're in April. We're coming up on 420, our big holiday, right?
That is the big one.
And yeah, that's exciting. I'm going to be at a few different events. I got an event called the Von Gala on the 19th, the night before 420. That's in Manhattan. That's going to be the Von Gala. I got information about that on my social media and stuff like that. But that's our buddy RJ throwing that event. I'll be speaking. There's going to be some stuff going on there with supporting Marijuana Prisoners Project and much, much more. So check that out on the 19th if you're in the New York City area. And then on the 20th, Royal Queen Seeds is doing an event with Mike Tyson in Times Square. So I'll be all around Manhattan and Queens on that day, the 20th. They've got an event in Brooklyn, and then I think Times Square, and then maybe we'll be at Sirt's Lounge or maybe Astor Club. There's a lot going on, so that'll be interesting. And then on the 25th, there's an Art of Mary Jane event in Manhattan as well on April 25th. And then I should mention also that we are planning an event for June 1st in New York City, here in Brooklyn at New York Hydroponics to celebrate, because that is the day that home grow is technically legal in New York for anyone over 21 years of age. Six plants per person, 12 plants per household. So we're going to be celebrating with Andrew over at New York Hydroponics, aka Always Blooming, which is a living soil specialist here in New York City. And I think, you know, his specialty is beds in tents with living soil. So hopefully you guys can make it to that as well. We're going to start selling tickets to that very shortly. But just wanted to tease that and get it out there June 1st. And yeah, that's awesome. We hope you guys can support us at all these events. If you can't make it to the events, if you're overseas or far away, you can also still support us at Patreon, which is very much appreciated. So please go to patreon.com/DannyDenko, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, and sign up. You can sign up for free and get info and newsletters and stuff from us and find out when we put stuff up there that's open to the general public, which includes all of our regular episodes of the show. But then we do special exclusive content just for our Patreon supporters. So please, for as little as $4.20 per month, you can support your favorite. Is it your favorite? I don't know. It doesn't even have to be your favorite, but a show that has helped you over the years in one way or another.
Yeah, a show. You can support a show.
For the cost of a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Less than the cost of a cup of cold brew. I mean, cold brew is like $5.75 or more these days.
A little outrageous. So,
yeah. $4.20 a month. And, you know, you get, all, like I said, free stuff. If you join at higher levels, you get even more free stuff. All kinds of cool stuff, including a copy of my book signed, Sweet Leaf Nutrients, Sweet Leaf deals on nutrients, all kinds of stuff from our sponsors. But anyway, long story short, please, please do support us if you can. We do appreciate that tremendously, and we love all our Patreon supporters, so thank you.
What exactly is cold brew? I don't even really know what that means, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's a type of way of making coffee without heating it, I guess, I'm assuming. But it's iced coffee. It's very strong. That's all I really know about it. It just seems like it's concentrated coffee as far as I can tell.
Sounds
but
good.
When I drink it, I get very excited and happy, and you know, it seems like it's like a very potent form of coffee that I'm assuming is brewed at a cold temperature.
That would make sense. Yeah. That's a good name for it then.
Nah.
Okay. Well, there you go. So aside from the cannabis knowledge, you're getting a little coffee knowledge here from Dan. That's exciting. And so, yeah, I guess before we get into the show, maybe we should talk a little cannabis news.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot's been happening, it seems like.
Yeah, well, let's start here in New York, not to make this super New York centric, but so everyone knows that while the rollout of New York's adult use program has been disappointing and slow, cannabis regulators took steps recently to increase access to legal pot, and a vote that they did this week, the Cannabis Control Board approved 101 new adult use licenses, and they expanded their ability to grant provisional licenses. The provisional licenses allow retailers up to a year to find their location and receive a final license. Previously, the board needed to meet and vote in order to approve a provisional license, but under these new rules, staffers can approve these licenses without a formal vote. So according to the Office of Cannabis Management's Executive Director, Chris Alexander, he says, quote, we have dramatically increased the access of New Yorkers to safer, tested legal product, and that momentum is only continuing. Regulators hope that these changes increase the speed and efficiency of the licensing process. The 101 new licenses approved by the board bring the state's total of legal cannabis businesses to 324. And according to Alexander, the state now has over 100 dispensaries in operation. This most recent license approval included 35 retail shops, 25 cultivators, 22 micro businesses, 11 distributors, and 8 processors, and a partridge in a pear tree. While officials presented the meeting and vote as a positive step for the state's legal cannabis industry, it was marred a bit by the issue of proximity protection. Because regulations prevent dispensaries from operating within 1,000 feet of each other, a buffer zone is created through proximity protection. When a business has proximity protection, other applicants are not allowed to apply for a license inside that 1,000-foot buffer zone. And that number actually goes up to 2,000 feet in areas with a smaller population. So some positive news, a little bit of the negative news that's been plaguing the state. But I guess, you know, they're trying to take steps to get things moving here.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a while and it's taken forever. And I hope I hope that this is a move to do that and make things happen a little faster, because again, that, you know, the legalization process happened years ago, several years, almost three. And we're still looking at about 100 licensed retail shops and just a few dozen producers and processors. So yeah, we need those numbers to go up. We need the licensees to go up and fast. And this whole 1,000 feet thing is crazy too. I mean, I don't know. It's like, you know, Manhattan's pretty dense. Even where I live, is, you know, it's like 1,000 feet is a pretty long distance. You know, it seems unnecessary to do that. Right now you have places competing with all these unlicensed shops that can be anywhere. So I don't know, you know, we'll see. I hope it works out better for the farmers and the processors, the retailers, everyone who has put their lives into this legal licensed world in New York that's been waiting patiently, you know, some not so patiently at this point. So I don't know. I hope it works out. And, you know, I wish everybody luck and success.
Yeah, for sure. But you're right. You know, bragging about having over 100 dispensaries in operation, you know, multiple years after the legalization vote, that's not much to be excited about. New York's a pretty big state.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that is what is happening in New York. As Dan mentioned, June 1st, home grow will be legal for just the you know, recreational people. It's already legal if you have a medical card. But that's something to get excited about. You could celebrate it with us in Brooklyn. But now let's go to New Hampshire real quick. And while New England has overwhelmingly embraced legal cannabis, there is one state in the region that has yet to get on board. And this year, once again, the New Hampshire House has approved a bill that would legalize cannabis. And once again, the Senate remains a roadblock, unlikely to pass the House bill, just as was the case in 2022. And was the case in 2023. So this bill would allow 15 retail stores across the state, and that would also include a 10% charge on recreational pot. That medical cannabis would not be taxed by the state. However, many believe that this House bill will again die in the Senate. This time, it's because the legislation moves away from the state-controlled model that is supported by Governor Chris Sununu. Representative Kenneth Wyler isn't feeling the new House bill either. He says, quote, "I rise to oppose any legalization of cannabis, also known as marijuana." We now have the examples of many other states that have legalized the substance over the past few years. Have any of them bragged about how much money they made? Have any of them seen a reduction in petty crime? But the bill's sponsor, Representative Erica Leyen, replied, quote, "No matter what we do today and no matter what ultimately happens with this bill, there are large numbers of people in New Hampshire that use cannabis. Telling them that it's illegal and they shouldn't use it hasn't worked. What this bill would change is you could have a regulated, tested product that's free of contaminants and that is not mixed with other drugs. You would know what was in it. You would know what the strain was. You would know the concentration. So for those who would choose to do it, it would be safer. And for everybody else, it wouldn't be a discussion that you're having, because most people who would use cannabis if it's legal already are using it." So we'll see what happens with the last holdout state in New England. It's crazy that they're still holding out.
Yeah, really. I mean, they are surrounded by licensed legal cannabis, even to the north in Canada. And the guy's name, it's Sununu.
Sununu, right.
I call him Sonono.
Sununu.
Because Sununu. He's just refusing the will of the people. And certainly a state like that where, you know, people are very libertarian minded, so to speak. Really, yeah, they deserve
free or
to
die, right?
Yeah. And the whole idea that he's saying these states aren't bragging. I mean, Colorado's made billions of dollars.
All they do is brag about it. All of them. That's like every news story is how much money they make.
Yeah, how much
They're
money
like
they've made in
rappers. It's
taxes.
like all about how much money they make.
Bling bling. Like, the streets are paved with gold now in Colorado. The schools have money. The roads are, fixed. It's they don't know how to spend the money in some cases. They're at a loss of what to do with all the revenue they get from cannabis. So, yeah, that's just crazy. And
Ridiculous, yeah.
yeah, it's another example of kind of the GOP shooting themselves in the foot on a subject that they could be ahead of the game on. I mean, it's about states' rights. They're all about states' rights, and it just seems to be that, like, even in states where 70 to 80% of the population wants legal cannabis, it's not happening because of people dragging their feet. And it tends to be these more sort of right-wing leaders. And I would hope that they could turn around. And if you are a constituent of one of these people, like, give them a call, tell them how you feel, even if you're a conservative. And tell them this legal cannabis is in line with conservative values. It really has not, no it's not a partisan issue.
Yeah, for sure. And to be fair, this is somewhat a bipartisan measure. The sponsor, Erica Leyen, she's a Republican. But of course, the dumbass who talked about the states not bragging about how much money they make is also a Republican, and the GOP currently holding the House, the Senate, and also the governorship. So, we want to be fair, but as Dan mentioned, that is ultimately what it comes down to, usually when it's not passing.
Indeed.
Okay, so yeah, that's what's going on in New Hampshire. That's a little bit of a look at what's going on in the world of weed. But we have a really exciting interview that we want to get to now.
Yeah, absolutely. We are going to be talking with Colin Palmer. He is the Chief Experience Officer of Vessel Life Science. He's an old friend of mine who's been heavily involved in not only cultivation, but processing, particularly solventless cannabis extractions, and has won numerous awards, including, I should say, Legends of Hash, third place in California, which is one of the toughest competitions to win, for rosin, cold cure rosin, melt, all of the different incredible products that can be made with this amazing healing flower. And he's been at the forefront of this technology for a long time. A true believer, a true friend of the halfling's leaf, and someone who I've known for a long time and who I've learned from. So why don't we take a break and come back with Colin Palmer from Vessel Life Science. As their motto goes, keep it fresh. Nature's Heritage takes pride in bringing the freshest, most potent, aromatic, and tasty flower to the Massachusetts and Maryland markets. Understanding that plants are the boss, the cultivation team gives them everything they need to reach their highest potential, including using canna coco and nutrients, some of the best in the industry. With very little automation in their process, Nature's Heritage is grown by humans who care for their plants from cultivation to harvest and drying and curing, all the way down to hand trimming their buds. The results capture the finest aspects of the many unique strains Nature's Heritage cultivates. And I should mention, I have literally tried their flower. They really put an emphasis on the quality of their products, the genetics, and the way that it's grown. It's all done by hand. No automation, and all very well dried and cured properly, which is so important. So when people tell me, dispensary weed can't hold a candle to this, that, and the other, I tell them, go check out Nature's Heritage. You can go on the website naturesheritagecannabis.com to find a store near you. If you're in Massachusetts or Maryland, you could take a look at their different products. All the different strains that they have, it's pretty amazing. So I can personally vouch for the quality of Nature's Heritage products. Visit naturesheritagecannabis.com, and as always, hashtag keep it fresh. All right, welcome back. And we have a special guest for you guys this episode. It is my friend Colin Palmer. He is the CEO of Vessel Life Science and an award-winning expert in cannabis extractions as well as cultivation. Welcome to the show, Colin.
Thanks for having me, man. Pleasure.
Absolutely. So, give our listeners an idea of your background and sort of how you arrived at cannabis in general and just a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, sure. Well, first and foremost, I'm an artist. I am also a horticulturalist. I've been studying the plant since around the mid-90s, really. I started growing the plant. I started studying the plant in 95, really growing the plant in 96. I have two older brothers that are very experienced artists and also horticulturalists themselves. So I was indoctrinated around this ideology of growing plants at such a young age. And then that kind of traveled through my teenage years. And as I grew as a younger or an older self, my younger self followed along, and I kept on growing cannabis as I learned how to be an adult. And 1996, I started growing things that were given to me, bag seeds. And then in the 2000s, I started growing really clones that were given to me in seeds. And that led me to really just explore and continue exploring. 1999, I really started to hone in on water hash. And that's when I started to bridge the gap between cultivation and extraction. And that really sent my creative senses really out into a large kind of frenzy to search the internet for more information, whether it was related to cannabis or not. As long as it was related to resin and extraction, I wanted to read it. So it just kind of snowballed, to be completely honest. And as I went to art school and studied design, I continued to grow cannabis. And as I continued to work as an artist, as an older self, I continued to grow cannabis and develop my skills. And it's just, working in the art realm as a freelancer and then in production and film production, you find yourself with a tremendous amount of time in between jobs, in between projects. And it just ironically lend itself to two passions that never stopped. And still to this day, don't. They all kind of intertwine with one another. And that's where my branding experience comes from. And that's where my photography experience comes from. I was a photographer for many years as well. But the Cliff Note version is really that. Cannabis was with me since a young age. I met a lot of really fantastic people that really encouraged me, such as Marcus Richardson, David Watson, Skunk Man Sam. And then most recently, Robert Clark. I think, meeting him in the last few years was, again, another shot of excitement and learning his backstory and where he's come from and the things he's continuing to study in his realm of writing. It just really, it's inspiring for me as I step into this new world of being a brand. So,
Yeah, absolutely. Now, can you tell me a little bit about Vessel Life Science and basically what you have done and what you do with that brand?
So Vessel Life Science started as just really an honest concept. It was more of a sketchbook where our processing and SOPs would go into a book, and we would constantly R&D, and it was more of an R&D slash Intel Inside ideology where we would go to a brand and teach them how to do all these really intricate extraction work, and then they could brand it, they could produce it at scale and go be their own brand. We've done this in places like Massachusetts. We've done it in places in Colorado and California. And it's really great for us because as an artist, I've always been servicing people. I never really thought that I'm supposed to be everything all at once. And, it was a really interesting concept for me to take all of this and be the brand, be the IP, be the, for the lack of better words, be the Intel inside of my own project. I didn't really understand the concept of that until most recently, where we decided through the years and decades of working with other brands that it was now the right time for us in our own right to become a house of brands. And to support that, it came through years of working with other brands, working with other people to fully realize their ideas and the dreams they had for their projects. So it was quite organic and pretty honest. You know, we felt like we had honed our skills at just the right time to really understand the breadth of not only the industry, but, you know, how do we fit within all of it? Because we're all artists, you know, we look at it from the dollars and cents, right? Like most of these big MSOs do now, but it was a learned thing. You know, we came in it from the other side of the spectrum, you know, so we didn't come at it from a real keen economics perspective until, you know, now. Took years, you know, to really think about that. You know, it's, you know, if I can just say this for the listeners, it's very odd to be everything all at once. I really think, you know, it's part of the problem in the industry is where everyone's trying to be everything and do everything. And there are specific lanes that you can pick and just go. And, you know, I think the arts is a really good example of that, where there's very few people that are mixed art, like very understand all of the disciplines to mix all of that mixed media together and be the one to solely do it. It's usually a large team of a lot of individuals that are individually amazing at those tasks, whether it's typography or animation or shooting film or shooting a photo. But together you create the hand picking up the object, as Jerry Garcia used to often talk about. And that concept always stuck with me. So I think, you know, in my older self at this stage of doing this 20 over 25 years later, I think, you know, we're at the stage where we understand each finger.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Marcus and Dave and Rob Connell Clark, and basically that, you know, that Marcus, of course, is Bubble Man. He's been on the show as well. And I actually remember them as the sort of the main founders of the Legends of Hashish parties that we used to attend in Amsterdam, coinciding with the Cannabis Cup. It was like a smaller gathering of real hash, you know, aficionados and connoisseurs and experts. And you recently took third place in the Legends of Hashish competition in California. Obviously a very difficult, prestigious competition to even place in. Can you tell me a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, Legends to me is kind of the event of all the hash events, in my just personal opinion. And I think, you know, it's longstanding tenor and the individuals that were behind it. And then also the fact that it's, you know, there's a lot of contestants. You know, there's over 60 plus in entries that I remember going through, and there's a lot of great talent that submits. So it's really great for me to see who's out there and who's doing what. And it's fun to submit to these things. Not that I weigh very much weight on the actual contest. I love being there personally, but it is nice to be recognized, and for others, your constituents, or, you know, the other hash makers, to really see the work that we put in. Cause we spend a lot of time on that batch. Actually, we don't typically spend a lot of time on contests. So, you know, we did make another batch that we didn't find hit the spot. So we went back in and made another batch. So, but it's a great experience, man. Those guys do such a good event. I really, kudos to Mark and, you know, also Addison, who helps on the West Coast. Addison puts in a ton of work, and he's also, you know, doing a lot of good work for the hash community. So to me, it's the one to be at, you know, at all of them.
Definitely. Definitely. That's awesome. So congrats on that. And good luck in Masters of Rosin as well coming up. Now let's take it back a little bit, because some of our listeners are beginner home growers, and they're very interested in creating a solventless product or you know, using some type of separation technique, a cannabinoid separation. Can you talk a little bit just about the differences, you know, between what is melt and rosin, and what, you know, a term like cold cure might mean? Just like a basic idea for people.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're talking about hash specifically, there's six different grading. There's 1 through 6 star. So there's first star, second star, third star, fourth star, fifth star, and sixth star. Six star full melt is really what you're after as a hash maker. And anything that falls under 6-star usually has a little bit of sizzle and bubble, and it leaves a little bit of, you know, some particulates. And as you go down from 6-star to 5-star, more and more particulates and more plant matter is left behind, and less flavor is present in the material, because you're dealing with more and more plant material that's in the resin. For a beginner, you know, I think what I always recommend is just harvest your material, freeze it immediately if you can. And if you're someone that's looking to extend and really just for the breadth of your harvest, because you have very little, just take your trim that you've trimmed after you're done, and it could be dry cure material, and wash it. And make hash, just start making hash. I just encourage you to make hash with whatever material you can. And it'll slowly morph from dry cure to fresh frozen to whole plant fresh frozen. And that's, you know, if you really get into it, that's all you'll do. From there, once you make the hash, you can put it into micron screens like this. This is a 15 micron micron screen bag. This screen is actually double bagged with 120 micron screen on the outside of it. And you can find these bags at purepressure.com. These are seamless bags, so a beginner would have a lot of luck getting a good return from this. And I think you could just easily make hash yourself and press it out. We started with hair straighteners. You can buy an A-frame press for very cheap on Amazon at this point. And then you can work your way up to things like Low Templates or Pure Pressure or whoever else you might be looking at, Triminator, you know, so on and so forth. Access Rosin also has really great equipment as well. So there's a plethora of equipment out there for beginners to get going. When I started doing this, there was literally nothing. You had to go to a hardware store and build it, and go find your own micron mesh and sew it together if you're really smart about it. And you just did it yourself. Everything was DIY. So it's really amazing that you have all this at your fingertips, especially in 2024. It's never been easier. So I'm a huge proponent of just making hash, pressing it, and enjoying it.
Now, what about actual cultivation practices? Is there anything people can do to improve the quality of their extract during the cultivation process?
Yeah, sugars and teas. You know, I think that's the plant wants to metabolize and wants to use those sugars and teas in its life cycle. You also want to make sure that you're depriving the plant of its nitrogen as you move into its flowering phase. Any hint of that in there is going to really drive the flavor profiles to adversely kind of perform and really develop. And you really want to look at living soil as a guiding light if you can. I know not everyone has the luxury of doing that, but you can really get the best from particular varietals. I want to preference this really important. It's very important to understand that not all varietals will work for every growing style. However, the ones that do really are great signifiers for living soil really, really shine well. And they always seem to outperform any traditional ag that I've ever done in my career. So when you're dealing with that, I think the rhizosphere really matters, and different fungicides you got to stay away from. You have to stay away from anything that you're spraying on the plant. You have to stay away from just really anything that you're putting into the soil that is going to adversely affect oil production. And that is like neem oils, any type of rosemary oils. And you have to be really careful about that, because that all, you'll do top, you know, you'll spray your plants and that'll go down to the root zone and affect the actual rhizosphere, because you're spending all this time building all this good fungi and a really good fungal network. And that's really going to destroy it. So you really have to be careful. And I know that's not what a lot of growers want to hear, but that goes back to protocols, SOPs, good growing practices. And that's really, grow with preventative measures is really the kind of the mantra here. And that's, if you can embody those things and really try to do the best you can, you're going to get closer to the best resin that you can possibly output. And that's a journey. That's going to be batch to batch. That's going to be year to year. So, you know, that's something to chase. That's what keeps us here, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Now, it seems like pathogens are more prevalent now, particularly hop latent viroid. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the effects of it, and also maybe some ideas for people to get an idea if maybe they have it, or, you know, or some signs that they might have that type of pathogen?
Yeah. So first thing I would recommend is go to medicinalgenomics.com and look up their solutions for hop latent viroid testing kits. They have a really awesome assay that they developed and a testing protocol that is, in my opinion, the most extensive out of any that's been developed. They developed it out of plants that actually were sick with hop latent viroid, not other crops. So you're getting a really accurate reading, and it's fairly affordable. So you, as a home grower, could even do this to know that your stock is even clean, let alone a commercial grower. So, you know, the signifiers that I found when I first found it in my garden, I had a clone of strawberry banana, straw nana, that I was gifted. And I remember shooting a picture of it and sending it to Medicinal Genomics, and it had this classic, you know, camouflage look on it. The things that you're going to start to look for are not only dudding, but also this camouflage look that the plants leave. And you can, you know, Google hop latent viroid to follow along here. Those are real visual signifiers. And then the dudding is also a visual signifier, but also pay attention to your soil and how the plant doesn't utilize the actual the water. It doesn't drink a whole lot. So you find a lot of rotted roots and a lot of things that are, from the root standpoint, really telling. So a big signifier that I've seen is your roots are starting to get brown as you dig your hand into the soil to look at it. And then you'll start to see the structural changes. But in flower, the biggest signifier that I've seen is low resin production, small flower site production, and I think also the dudding effect overall, like plants that just don't want to fully express themselves. That's been the biggest signifier. So when I found this, you know, I think it was 2019 when I started to really notice hop latent viroid in my garden. I contacted Kevin, and then we started doing some testing, and then he went on a tangent and started really going into the subject matter at a super fast rate. And then I started doing small tests and controlled studies to better understand. Like I did a leaf hopper study to understand if other, like, leaf munching or leaf eating organisms could pass it on to other plants. And the short cliff notes of it is yes, of course, bright idea, Colin, you know, of course it's going to be passing it because it's a leaf eating, you know, organism. But the thing is no one could prove that. So I wanted to find out. So we just decided to take it upon ourselves to do the actual study. So those things are important because demystifying the path forward is really the only way. And we don't have a whole lot of information on this subject matter yet. Even with Tumi doing a ton of instrumentation, we have a long way to go. So I think everyone needs to use bleach in between every time you cut something from a plant. If you can, you have a small enough grow, write the varietals names on each scissors and then keep those scissors with each one of those plants, like tie a little string to it and keep it there. I think that's a really nice way to mitigate passing it to plant to plant. And then beyond that, you just have to always wear gloves, make sure that you clean everything in between your grow. When you take clones in, lean into people like Medicinal Genomics. It only costs you $30 or less to get a test done. And it'll at least give you the peace of mind that when you're bringing new genetics in that have been passed around the world, you have a good starting point and a good jump off point for success. Cause you know, you're spending the next, call it 8 to 10 weeks of your life on water, energy, and then your time and resources on nutrients, depending on how you're doing it. And it's really important to
you know what you're doing, you know, and know what you're getting into. Because seeds, you know, we've all grown seeds that have not worked out. And how disappointed are we when that happens, let alone a clone that's sick, you know, and then it passes it perhaps to other valuable plants that you love and have kept with you. For me, it was really about saving my sour diesel clones that I've kept since the 90s and my chem dogs. And, you know, because it's hard to get it's hard to get authority in genetics today. You know, it truly is, because we don't know where any of this stuff came from anymore. And I, you know, as someone who's been doing this as long as I have, I yearn for the truth, like just to be like, this is that, you know, this is Durban poison, that's Jack, you know, knowing that that is what it is genomically, because then it demystifies the rest for me, you know.
Absolutely. And speaking of old school New York strains, I know you actually hold the garlic, which is an amazing strain. I remember from way back in the day, I think even the Professor Afghani days, like before my time in New York, at least. But very distinctive garlic kind of terps and all of that. Like, and, you know, you're also known for the lemon cake. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, strain, those particular strains and how you do verify that they're true and all of that?
Yes, for sure. So lemon cake I created in 98 as a young guy experimenting with outdoor crossing and pollinating things outside. I pollinated a branch of a plant that I'd grown full term, and it finished out. It was, you know, it's a NL5 Thai times skunk one times yeah, that was it. That's it. Times Thai. I'm sorry, the last Thai. And that particular year, and through that next year, I went through all those seeds and I found four particular keepers that we felt were really lemon forward, but had more of a pound cake taste. And at the time, I had never really smelled or knew anything like that at the time. So I never really had a pound cake. That true cake smell to me was very new. So when we selected that lemon cake, we felt like it was unique. And it actually, a few years later, when we started really hashing hard, that was one of the best producers for us as well. So we ended up keeping that varietal around and then passing that out. I remember giving it to like OT1 from Overgrow, if you remember OT1. Right. And yeah, just like that whole crew, ICMG, NCGA, all those guys were on there on the forum. So I'd like, we would pass clones, and NCGA gave me the Blue Widow clone, which was at the time, like, to me, like, I still search for that. I'm sure it's not as good as I remember. I'm sure if we got that back, it'd probably be like, oh, it's a blue dream. but you know, the nostalgic of it all really kind of hones in and wants me to get that one. The New York City garlic, or the garlic, that came to me through a really close friend of mine on the forums. And then that I outcrossed to a ChemD times GSC, or no, Chem 91, I'm sorry, not ChemD, Chem 91 times GSC. And that I made in Brooklyn, New York, in Clinton Hill. And I was literally our spot, I won't name the streets, but in Clinton Hill, right on the border of Bed-Stuy in Clinton Hill is where we were. And we worked that seed line, I mean, I think for two or three generations. And then we selected the garlic, that clone, the garlic, from that. And that, you know, some of our friends in Brooklyn still to this day think that's some of the best herb that they smoke. I mean, that's a really big claim, but it is good weed. I mean, it's really great herb. It's checks all the boxes. It's super garlicky. It's very chemmy. It's, you know, it doesn't really have much cookies on it, but it is in there. But at the time when we were making it, you know, GSC wasn't really a thing. It wasn't really an important varietal the way it is today. It was more of like the forums, you know, like we traded clones and the forum Girl Scout cookie. I don't think anyone I mean, the unique aspect of the forum cookies is that it really is unique as hash. So I think that's where in the hash community we paid attention to it, but it didn't explode until much later. Therefore, we weren't really looking at it in that time we were creating that cross. It wasn't something I was like, yeah, we're going to use this and it's going to be this or that. We were very, very much experimenting. So
nice. Yeah, absolutely. Now, most recently, you and Vessel Life Science announced entry into the New York marketplace. Tell me a little bit about that and what the plans are there.
Yeah, thanks, man. So New York, is home to us. We started there all these years later. I went to college in New York City, studied as an art school kid. I studied at Pratt Institute, and we ran a healthy scenario there to bring our books in and pay for our art supplies. So, for us, it's bringing it home. It's bringing it back to where it all kind of began and where we kind of developed ourselves. We built a cold room in the early 2000s in Bushwick, and that's where we made a lot of our material. And so for me, New York signifies a couple things. It's just, it's home. It's where my family is. It's where my brothers and I started our art careers and as our professional artists, I should say. And I'm excited for the New York market. So it's, beyond all that, it's just bringing it home. And then, like I said in the earlier, we spent all this time really learning about our process and our processing techniques and how we choose to be and move with the plant. And it's really, for us, this is a really organic, meaningful moment, because it's not just a business. This is our life. This is our family. This is what we do. So on one component, it's really different because we're now like, yeah, this is our business, but on the other hand, we're still those 16 to 20 year old kids making hash in Brooklyn. You know what I mean? And we're still those kids that are searching deep in our seed packs and asking ourselves questions like, is this good enough? Is this still heady? Is this, and we want to bring that same promise that we bring to ourselves and have bring to ourselves back to the market. And we feel like at this point in our lives, we're finally like, right, we're ready for it. We understand where the industry's been, we understand sort of where it's kind of going, but more importantly, understand ourselves, And I think that's, for the first time in a long time, we just said to ourselves, we got to get our own license. We can't keep just continuing to build other brands and build other people's futures. We love doing that. I don't want to say that we don't, but, we've always wanted our own house. We've always wanted our own lab to just do our own projects, and then bring our friends in, and that's where we're at. We want to build a house of brands, but in the most untraditional, not haphazard, but most calculated, beautiful, calculated chaos way possible. It's bringing the best friends that we know that are so good at what they do and letting them use our license with us, and then also developing our own product lines and our own brand. And then allowing that to kind of take shape and support that as its own. It's really important to us, but again, it's a promise that we're going to perform at our best and give you the best that we can, because it's too easy to just do whatever you want and grow whatever you want and put it on the shelf and have a really bad experience. I mean, it's just, I have it all the time. We want to be able to provide product that people want to come back for. It's really important. I think the work that we've done in the industry with other brands, I think if the listeners are out there that know that work, just know that we have so much more to offer. And we're so excited to bring that. I mean, it's been decades of just cataloging different techniques and different processing and different varietals that we want to bring to the market. But at the end of the day, as I said, we're still simply enthusiastic about the plant, enthusiastic about flavors and profiles and sessions and,
Yeah, absolutely. And we had this discussion at the New York Small Farmer event recently, but just this whole idea that everyone's chasing THC percentages, and we really need to get beyond that and really chase something entirely different, which is the flavor profiles and the experience itself, all of it, right? I mean, do you have any words about that?
Yeah, I think we said it during that weekend. It's everyone's so worried about how to put this terpene profile on this or infuse that. And I just invite everyone to ask themselves, what happens if you grow cannabis simply very well and you have terpene profiles that are above 3.5%? You are expressing those volatile organic compounds from that varietal in a way that represents what you're growing and spending that 8 to 12 week time with it to get to that place to dry cure it. That to me seems like the missing link right now and the hardest thing to do. As simple as that sounds, I invite everyone to go back to the basics because I think that's really what's missing. And I mean it. I don't what I mean, I could talk about it, all day long. The toxicology alone, you don't want to be smoking things that are sprayed or infused like that. Unless it's hash or something that's coming from a clean extraction process. It's really important to recognize those things, and the industry will be better for itself if we lean into the basics and stop trying to control every single aspect of it.
Nice. Absolutely. Now, how can people keep up with what you're working on at Vessel Life Science and everything that you've got going on?
Yeah, you can follow us on Instagram at Vessel Life Science. You can take a look at us on the internet, on the web, vessellifescience.com. Also, we are going to be retransforming our website for mailing lists. So I want everyone to please join the mailing list and please check out any events that are in or around New York City. Please come out and say hello. We're doing a Record Store Day event on Saturday because we're musicians and we felt like the community in cannabis and the music world are one and the same. So we're doing an event on Saturday. So look for more events that incorporate the arts, music, and anything above in all five of the boroughs.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Colin. Colin Palmer of Vessel Life Science. Thanks for coming on the show, and really appreciate all your hard work in the cultivation realm and extraction realm.
Thank you so much, man. Thanks for having us.
And we will be back after these messages. Welcome to the Spring Spectacular at seedsherenow.com, where April showers bring not just flowers, but a festival of flavors and genetics that'll transform your garden into a masterpiece. This month, we're doubling down on delights with cookies as our flavor of the month and compound genetics as breeder of the month, each at 20% off. So dive deep during National Gardening Week with a buy two, get one free offer on elite packs. The pinnacle of our celebration is the 420 extravaganza with unbeatable deals on the dankest strains. And don't forget Earth Day, where going green earns you 10% off on all orders. April is the time to grow with us, join our community, and elevate your garden to legendary status. Check out seedsherenow.com, where excellence in genetics meets the joy of cultivation. And Grow Bud Yourself listeners can use the promo code DANKOSHIP for free shipping on all domestic orders. Seedsherenow.com. All right, welcome back. And we have an exciting cultivation segment for you guys. It has been a fortnight.
And yes, this is a fortnight. And yes, this is a fortnight. strain of the fortnight.
What do you got for us? What do you got for us this week?
Strain of the fortnight. Strain of the fortnight.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's what that means. Yeah. So, what do you got? This strain of the fortnight.
Yes. So, this episode, I would like to talk about a strain called Mimosa. This is an amazing strain, very similar to the brunch cocktail of the same name. Very fruity, very buzzy and fizzy and uplifting. So, yeah, definitely an interesting strain. Mimosa is a cross of Clementine and Purple Punch. So, very interesting combo of something kind of very citrusy on the one hand and then something very fruity. So the Clementine being, you know, from the citrusy kind of limonene side of things, and then the Purple Punch being more sweet and candy and fruit. So definitely an interesting combo. Very pretty flowers for sure. Dark green on the inside with like lavender highlights. So I guess that's the Purple Punch coming through, that like dark lavender, dark green kind of thing, but very frosty though, with very frosty trichomes. So when you look at it, it's interesting. It's like dark on the inside and very light sort of on the outside with those very frosty, glistening glandular trichomes. Basically, you know, a nice little squeeze between the fingers is going to really reveal that scent, the tangy orange peel, sort of ripe grapefruit side of things, the citrus side. And the same thing when you take a hit, it's like biting into a juicy tangerine. Also, but that candy side gives you like that sour lemon heads kind of candy flavor, if that makes any sense. And so it's very interesting. And also the effect is very interesting. Like I said, very fizzy and uplifting. Definitely a good wake and bake strain. Very happy, very clear high, centered and focused. Really good for daytime activities. I recommend things like visiting a museum, taking a nice walk in the park, you know, just laughing with some friends during the day on a picnic or something along those lines. Great way to start your day. Electric lemony orange sativa dominant hybrid will really get your adventures going. And I think very, very delightful Mimosa strain. And it's available actually to smoke from our sponsor, Nature's Heritage Cannabis. Check out Nature's Heritage Cannabis. We just started a blog online there as well, where I'm describing some of the strains, including this one, Mimosa, and Lamb's Breath, which we did as the last strain of the fortnight. And I don't want to leave out the medicinal uses of this, because it really certainly very good for something like stress, depression. That dominant terpene that I talked about, limonene, is known for mood enhancement, you know, anecdotally reducing inflammation as well. So if you're suffering from any kind of social anxiety or post-traumatic stress, and you know, who isn't, right? Try some Mimosa. It's got all those positive uplifting effects without the jitteriness or paranoia that you can get from some fruity, you know, citrusy hybrids. So give it a shot. Clementine crossed with Purple Punch makes Mimosa. It's a sativa dominant hybrid, available to smoke from Nature's Heritage Cannabis in multiple states, including Massachusetts and Illinois and Maryland, I believe, and a few others. Also available in seed form from seedsherenow.com. They have Mimosa Cake Auto, which is our auto femmes, from Fast Buds, which are very fast buds, obviously, auto femmes. So check out seedsherenow.com for free shipping. Use that code DankoShip at seedsherenow. And hope you guys enjoy. That has been Mimosa. Check out Nature's Heritage and seedsherenow.com.
Yeah, man. Excellent. Great strain of the fortnight. And our listeners know that each episode, you provide a grow tip that's going to make everyone listening a better cultivator. So what would you like to discuss this time?
Yes. So this is an interesting one. I haven't really discussed this much. I've been thinking about this lately because I know that this is kind of the time of year, whether you're popping seeds or rooting clones. It's also the time for sharing genetics. And part of that includes shipping clones. Now, I want to, you know, start with a caveat that, you know, shipping clones is a legal gray area. It's, I think, technically illegal. So certainly this is just for informational purposes only, and not any type of suggestion of what you should do or what you can legally get away with. So all this information is just for, you know, for educational purposes only, and not something that I'm recommending that you try or even saying that, you know, you can get away with. But that having been said, if you were to think about it, the important things, as we always talk about with shipping, with cloning in general, is moisture and heat, which is basically what keeps clones alive until they are able to send out some roots. So it's the same sort of thing with shipping them. You want to keep them moist without them rotting, and you want to keep them warm enough that they don't, you know, warm but not hot, and certainly not super cold, although cold is probably better than too hot, because it'll just put them into a state of stasis rather than actually help them to rot from the inside, as too much heat can do. So again, anytime you're sealing up something wet, that's plant material, it's going to have a tendency to want to mold or rot, and basically compost, because those are the things that they need to do so. There's two different ways to go about this. You can do this with cuts that you've just cut fresh. I recommend taking those cuts and immediately putting the cut ends into a mild nutrient solution or plain water, not cold or hot, but something right around room temperature or so, 70 degrees. That way that you don't get that embolism, you don't get an air bubble that gets stuck into that cut end and keeps moisture from absorbing into the cut, into the clone, and keeping it from dying, basically. Like, you definitely need moisture to be able to go into that cut end. So you want to avoid any sort of air bubbles there. And then if you're going to do that, you want to basically use like a wet paper towel wrapping around the cut end, just to keep that cut end moist without it rotting. You certainly want to dip that into some type of fungicide, cloning powder or gel also. And that way you can basically ship. I would also certainly never use, you know, ground shipping. I would use 3-day, you know, maximum time, 3-day shipping, 2-day, 1-day. Whatever you can do. You don't want to do this when it's super cold or super hot, because the package is susceptible to all of those temperatures as well. I would also use stamps for something like this rather than going to the post office or printing the postage at home, or using something like FedEx or UPS, which are trackable and traceable. If you use a package in the USPS Postal Service with adequate amount of stamps on it, that way it's not traceable back to where that stamp or package was purchased, with a credit card or anything like that. Buy those stamps with cash. Ship sealed, obviously. You want to not allow the branches to break or bend. There are products you can purchase, clone shippers of multiple different sizes. There's even cloneshipper.com, not an advertiser, but certainly friends of the pod. And they've created several different options, which even incorporate LED lighting and really keep that clone safe inside a sealed environment with lighting and moisture and everything monitored. There are cheaper options, obviously, just basic clone shippers. Like, they almost look like VCR, VHS packages, if you're old enough to remember, about the size of a VHS box. And they protect the clone. They're plastic. They keep the clone from bending or breaking or being smushed. if you're sending rooted clones, that's definitely the way to go, either with the clone shipper from cloneshipper.com or just Google clone shipper, and lots of different options will pop up. And basically, you know, the important thing is don't damage the roots, don't damage the clone, keep everything safe, warm, and moist, sealed, and short amount of shipping time as possible, and you should be safe. Again, if you're receiving clones, you should take those clones immediately upon arrival, transplant them into something larger, put them into some type of incubator system, whatever you might have, whether it be a tray with a dome on top, and certainly quarantine those clones, because this, you know, sharing clones and shipping clones and all these things are a great way to introduce pests or viruses into your grow. So you want to keep those clones separated, keep checking them, dipping them if necessary, if you see any sign of mites or anything like that. They're young, they're small, and they're easily handled at this point because you don't have a tremendous amount of vegetation, but I would dip them in something if you suspect that there's any kind of activity with pests, and get them under light, get them into a proper vegging environment, whether they have roots or not. If they don't have roots, this is the time to make sure that, you know, you put them into whatever they're going to be rooting in, keep it warm, keep it humid, and keep it under decent either fluorescent or LED lighting in order to induce those roots and get those clones rooted and thriving. If they're already arrived rooted, get them into larger containers and under lights, and start the vegging process. Again, keeping those clones separate from any other plants you might have already growing. And there you have it. That is shipping clones.
All right. Excellent. So some good advice. Again, we're not recommending that you do any of that, but as Dan said, just some information. Okay, so now we are at the portion of the show where we answer some questions from our listeners. And if you have a question you would like answered on the show, get in touch with us. You could email us. As always, that is info@growbudyourself.com. Also on the socials and on Patreon. All right, so what do you say we get started here?
Absolutely, let's do it.
Let's do it. So we're going to start with Chuck. And Chuck writes, Danko and Company. I guess that's me. I'm company.
You're the company.
I'm company.
I'm just the Danko.
You're the Danko and I'm the company. Chuck writes, my wife has been very tolerant of my growing hobby. I don't use anywhere near enough cannabis to financially justify the hobby thus far. I really would love to have access to an automated curing drying setup, but the capital outlay could cause a lot of friction at home. Okay. Particularly, it doesn't make financial sense to have an appliance that's going to sit idle for long intervals of time. Do you know if any group has ever tried to co-op this kind of thing, home grow accessories? Splitting the costs and maximizing the use of costly devices could make a lot of sense. I could see a co-op also including a high-quality bud trimming machine, joint rolling, cone packing setup, etc. Also, he says, I hate that I missed the event last week in New York City. It's tough for me to make the trip down to the city that doesn't include something my wife enjoys. How can I purchase or access a recording to that event? Thanks for everything you do for the community. I really enjoy the podcast. So, all right. What would you say here to Chuck?
Yes. First of all, thank you so much for the kind words, and thanks for wanting to come down for that event. The event was great. It went well. The way to purchase access to the recording is to join our Patreon. So go to patreon.com, patreon.com/DannyDanko. You can join there for $4.20 per month or higher.
I should mention, Chuck actually did. He just joined the Patreon.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, but for everybody else, that's how you would get it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. If you guys are interested, the recording, YouTube link is there at Patreon. It's a private link. That you can only get by joining our Patreon at any level, even $4.20 per month, which I think is a very reasonable level at which to support a show that hopefully has helped you in some way improve the quality of your cannabis. So please do that. As far as the co-op idea, I think it's a great idea. I have seen this with more pricey kind of equipment, like you mentioned, trimming machines. I've certainly seen efforts where people can share those and rent them out when they're not in use. I haven't really seen the joint rolling and cone packing kind of idea in this, or as you mentioned, like a curing drying setup. I have seen it with freeze dryers, for instance, and certain hash making equipment where people can sort of share the equipment based on who needs it at what period of time, because most people don't need it all the time. And I guess that's the point you're making, is like these things can sit idle and also be quite prohibitive cost-wise. So I think it's a great idea. I think, you know, drying and curing can be handled without sort of an automated setup, as long as you're able to control climate in your drying and curing space, keep it cold, keep the airflow going and all that. But if you'd really like something like that and you can't really outlay that type of capital, I think it's a great idea to share the burden of that. And if you were even going to start something like that, especially now that it's legal in New York, if assuming that you live in New York, but if you're living in a place where there's legal home grow and there's really no qualms about sharing this type of equipment between two people that are not under any threat of any sort of, law enforcement activity, you can go on to some, you know, kind of websites and places where people do that sort of thing, even Nextdoor, for instance, where people share equipment, or Facebook or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, just be careful, be smart. But I think it's a great idea and I wish you good luck. And thanks for your support.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Chuck. We appreciate it. And if you do figure that out, get in touch with us. Let us know how you did it. Okay, so let's move on to Facebook. And this is from David, who writes, I'm a newbie grower in Ohio. I started my first seeds on December 7th when it was legalized. I'm harvesting the plants now. Not a bad batch for a newbie. I made several mistakes and found the answers just listening to this show and Free Weed. Thank you so much for this. I am soon to be a Patreon, and I've learned so much from you. My question is simple. I hear you and others talk about harvest time, and I've seen my first harvest through a couple changes, and I was a little concerned. You say to harvest when the trichomes are cloudy, and I've also heard a second method is to look at the pistils. My trichomes were cloudy under a 40 times loop, but the pistils were still white and hairy looking. I've heard that there should be a percentage of the pistils amber and curled in towards the bud before harvesting. Can you tell a newbie what to do? LOL. Dazed and confused, but loving it. I understand that more pistils that are amber equals a more calming feel and body buzz, but I wanted to see if there is a happy median. So, yeah, what would you say here to David?
Yeah, so for me, the trichomes are definitely the deciding factor. And if they're cloudy in the middle with your 40 times loop, then that's a good time to harvest when the majority of the trichomes are cloudy. Now, the pistils turning red and sort of drying and shriveling, that is something that does happen as the plant matures, but not the greatest way to measure whether it's ripe and ready. I would say if the pistils are still all white and hairy looking, really take a close look at those trichomes, make sure they're cloudy and not clear, because it can sometimes resemble cloudiness if you're not really looking all the way into the middle of the trichome gland. It can look cloudy. You just have to take a really close look and make sure that glandular ball has that cloudiness inside. You can't see through it at all. The pistils are not the best way to measure this, but if the pistils are still white, then that might be a sign that you might need to wait a week or so. And it will be more calming and more of a body buzz if you do wait a bit. And you'll probably see those cloudy trichomes become somewhat amber, or at least a few of them will start to become more amber. And sometimes people like to harvest at that point, because they do get a little more of a calming effect. So I would say stick with the trichomes, make sure you're using that 40 times loop and really getting in there, making sure that they are cloudy in the middle of that gland. But yeah, thank you for your support. Thank you for being a soon to be Patreon supporter as well. And yeah, good luck, man. I'm so glad to hear that home grow is legal in Ohio, and people are already starting to enjoy the fruits of their legal grows, which is amazing and really just the whole point of why we do all this. So very thankful to hear that you've learned a lot from us, and you know, keep supporting us, keep listening, and we'll keep bringing you as great information as we can.
Well, we'll aim for great, but we'll settle. It's crazy to think that Ohio beat New York to legal home grow, but apparently they did. So awesome. Congratulations, yes. David.
Well, and I should also mention that you said that, New York home grow will be legal on June 1st, and we are throwing a wonderful event on June 1st as well that I mentioned earlier in the show, but hopefully anyone in the tri-state area or nearby and in this vicinity on June 1st will come to our event at New York Hydroponics, celebrating the beginning of legal home grow in New York on June 1st here in Brooklyn. So, you know, check that out. Hope you guys will join us. It'll be fun. We're going to celebrate. We're going to learn. So it'll be a celebration and some education and some fun and quite a sesh, hopefully, too. So some burgers, some fries, some weed, and some good info.
Right. Not necessarily in that order, but but yeah, that one will also be available on the Patreon for our supporters there. And thank you very much, David. Thanks to everybody who wrote in this week. That's all the time we have, but we're going to take a short break, come back, and wrap this sucker up.
Let's do it. If you're a grower or you're thinking about starting your first crop, then you need to know about Sweetleaf plant nutrients. Sweetleaf has an incredible line of organic fertilizers and, of course, their legacy line that includes organic and some synthetic fertilizers. So check them out at sweetleaf.com. That's sweetleaf.com. The code DANKO15 gets you 15% off everything at Sweetleaf. That's 15% off the signature line of nutrients, as well as essentials like complete indoor hydroponic grow tent kits, grow lights, plus awesome apparel, backpacks, and much more. If you join our Patreon, you actually get access to additional codes worth 20% and even 25% off. And all paid Patreon supporters receive free Sweetleaf nutrients just for signing up. Sweetleaf provides all the tools necessary for the modern gardener. Check them out at sweetleaf.com and remember the code DANKO15 for 15% off. Hey guys, I want to tell you about one of our favorite sponsors that has been with us since the beginning, Excelsior Extracts, made up of Outcast and TOH from Excelsior. They have been incredible people, incredible growers, and made an incredible product. Unfortunately, a year ago or so, we lost Outcast, our friend Elaine, just a tremendous loss to our community, someone who really helped with a lot, and including the THC-infused pain rub that was made by patients for patients, providing incredibly powerful relief from pain. The product was developed to treat Outcast's chronic pain. So you can trust me that this is a super potent topical, really works. A lot of topicals just don't have that, the amount of THC to provide the relief, or they have a very perfunctory amount of CBD. And this is a salve that works, a real pain rub. You can find out more about Excelsior on Instagram at Excelsior Extracts. You can DM them to learn more about the amazing pain rub. Don't forget to tell TOH that Grow Bud Yourself sent you, and we really appreciate all the support over all the years. All right, welcome back. This is the wrap. Please stick around for the wrap though, because we've got some great deals for you guys. Starting with Prime Superior Inoculant. The code there is PS420 for 15% off. Now is the time. They have a seed soak that's incredible, cloning honey that I literally just used in the last week or so. All kinds of amazing products, the spray, the drench. Check them out, primesuperior.com, PS420 for 15% off. Check out Excelsior Extracts. Their THC-infused pain relief rub is amazing. You can follow along with them at Excelsior Extracts. on Instagram, Sweet Leaf Nutrients. They are an amazing plant nutrient that you can get for 15% off. Use the code DANKO15. We have 20% or even 25% off codes if you join our Patreon. So please check that out and join up. Seeds Here Now, of course, we love them and so happy to have an amazing selection of seeds to choose from over 70 different breeders. Check out Danko Ship. Use that code for free shipping on all of your seeds from seedsherenow.com. Now is the time. Get your seeds. Get them going. Get them planted. Get them growing. And of course, Nature's Heritage. So excited to have Nature's Heritage on board. They are just an incredible resource for flower. A lot of times people will tell you you can't get great flower at a dispensary, but I beg to differ. Check out any Nature's Heritage shop in Massachusetts or Maryland. And they're in a few other places too, Puerto Rico, Illinois. But Massachusetts and Maryland, those are close by, at least to where we are. So check out their amazing flower. Visit naturesheritagecannabis.com to learn more about their strains, to read my blogs that I'm doing for them on different strains that they have, including, you know, Lamb's Bread, Mimosa, Double Crush, Grape Diamonds, tons of other ones, grown right and dried, cured, trimmed, all of that done properly. So thank you to them. Great sponsor, Nature's Heritage. And of course, vapor.com, they are an affiliate. Any kind of consumption devices that you need, use the code GROWBUDYOURSELF20 for 20% off everything site-wide. That includes Puffco's, Peaks, Pros, everything, you know, Volcano stuff, Dab X, anything that's a vaporization device, rolling papers, trays, anything. You can get it at vapor.com. And you can get 20% off site-wide using the code GrowBudYourself.com. I'm sorry, GrowBudYourself20 for 20% off. Thanks to you guys, all our YouTube supporters. We're close to being able to monetize our YouTube. So please subscribe and check us out over there. Patreon supporters, you guys rock. Yeah, man, what an episode. Thank you to Colin Palmer from Vessel Life Science. Thank you to DJ Jacques and Windstrong. Thanks to you, Mike, and all of you guys for listening, everyone for supporting us. And now's the time. It's April. It's time to get those seeds planted, those clones rooted, and get growing today. Grow Bud Yourself, episode 131. Let's put it in the books.